Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we're reading from Canto 10, Chapter 15, and the text is 43. So we'll chant responsibly. Pitva mukunda muktas saragam akshi pringais. Tapam jahar virajam vraja yosito. Me. Sorry, I won't have the correct meter because I'm not very musically inclined, so I will read it as best I can. Tatsat kritim samadigamya vivesha gostam. Savrita hasa vinayam yat spanga muksham. Pitva mukunda mukha saragam akshi bringais. Tapam jahavira jambraja yosito hini. Tat sat kritim samadigam ya vivesha gostam. Savrita hasha vinayam yatapanga moksham. Pitva mukunda mukha saragam akshi. Bring guys. Tapam jahar viraha jam prajayo sito hini. Tatsat kritim samadagam ya vivesha gostam. Savrita sa vinayam yatapanga moksham. Please chant. Tva mukunda mukha saragam akshi bringais. Ham yahar virajam prajavyositoham. Tatsat kritim samadigam yavivesha gostam. Savrita hasa vinayam yatapanga moksham. Mukunda Mokha Saragam Makandais. Tapam Jahar Vidaha Yam Vraja Yosito Hini. Tat Kritam Samadigam Yavivesha Gostam. Savrita Hasha Vyagam Yatapanga Moksham. Okay. the word for word translation. Pitva, drinking. Mukunda, kukha, of the face of Lord Mukunda. Saragam, the honey. Akshi Bringai, with their bee-like eyes. Tapam, distress. Yahu, gave up. Virbajam, based on separation. Vraja Yosita, the ladies of Vrindavan. Ani, during the day. Tat, that. Sakriti, offering of respect. Samadigamya, fully accepting. Vivesha, he entered. Gostam, the cowherd village. Savrida, with shame. Hasa, laughter. Vinayam, with bumblebees, with humbleness, sorry. Yat, which. Apapa, of their sidelong glances. Moksham, the release. Okay. In the translation for text 43. With their bee-like eyes, the woman of Vrindavan drank the honey of the beautiful face of Lord Mukunda, and thus they gave up the distress they had felt during the day because of separation from him. The young Vrindavan ladies cast sidelong glances at the Lord, glances filled with bashfulness, laughter, and submission. And Sri Krishna, completely accepting these glances as a proper offering of respect, entered the cowherd village. Purport. In Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Srila Prabhupada describes the incident as follows. All the gopis in Vrindavan remained very morose on account of Krishna's absence. All day they were thinking of Krishna in the forest or of him herding cows in the pasture. When they saw Krishna returning, all their anxieties were immediately relieved, and they began to look at his face the way drones hover over the honey of the lotus flower. When Krishna entered the village, the young gopis smiled and laughed. Krishna, while playing the flute, enjoyed the beautiful smiling faces of the gopis. The Supreme Lord Sri Krishna is the supreme master of romantic skills, and thus he eagerly exchanged having feelings with the young cowherd girls of Vrindavan. When a chaste young girl is in love, she glances at her beloved with shyness, jubilation, and submission. When the beloved accepts her offering of love by receiving her glance and is thus satisfied with her, the loving young girl's heart becomes filled with happiness. These were exactly the romantic exchanges taking place between beautiful young Krishna and the young cowherd girls of Vrindavan. Om Agyana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuru Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopi Sram Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Gadam Mayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru, Sri Yutapada Kamalam Sri Guru, Vaishnavam Sha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragutanam Vitam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saham Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Pada Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishaka Vitam Sha. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhye Vacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Vampadaswami Iti Namine Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschacha Deshatarine. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. It's all right. I think it gets it. Can you hear? Okay. And just lay it down. Okay. So first, my apologies for being slightly late, some unforeseen thing. Now, going into this verse, there's mention in the purports how Srila Prabhupada describes the incident in Krishna book. So I'm going to read that again. It's rather beautiful. All the gopis in Vrindavan remained very morose on account of Krishna's absence. All day they were thinking of Krishna in the forest or of him tending cows in the pasture. When they saw Krishna, their anxieties were immediately relieved, and they began to look at his face the way drones hover over the honey of the lotus flower. Now, we've just heard this beautiful description of what the meditation was of the gopis. And the first thing that immediately has to be said is, coming from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he has this very extraordinary essay entitled The Erotic Principle and Unalloyed Devotion. And so therein he writes that in our present sinful, these are his it's his expression, in our present sinful state, sex suggests the idea of sensuous impurity. Those are his words. Because our present self is sensuous. So this is the perspective from which one looks at this kind of amorous exchange that's taking place. So it's a generalization, it's applying to us. So it means that our present self is one in which we're perceiving through the senses. And it means that we also enjoy pleasure through sensation. So we're very much physiologically bound through the habitation of this body. How we're perceiving, what we're hearing, and it has a lot to do with being equipped with the particular senses, and also the fact that we experience physical sensation. This is so it influences our understanding. So This explains the sense of impurity that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is talking about. and he says, this is him again, there's an incongruency between any material, limited, unconscious substance and the human soul. So he's known for being highly eloquent. So this is so, this kind of incongruency that he's talking about. Since the human soul has got individuality and it's got eternal existence, so as opposed to any unconscious material substance that's been perceived or looked at. So just to, I guess, drive home the point of, you know, the huge difference between the physicality and the way it influences one's perception and one's understanding, and then that actually there's that different self that isn't experiencing on a sensuous level, the soul part. Krishna's explaining in Bhagavad Gita in 2.12 that never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings. And in the future, and not in the future shall any of us cease to be. So indicating that the eternality of the soul. So this is pointing to the necessity to see how seeing from a soul level or seeing from the physiological level will affect how one is understanding just this very intimate pastime that one is hearing of between Krishna and the gopis. So I'll read the Sanskrit of that verse, because the eternality of the soul is necessary to emphasize from the point of view of just looking at Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's understanding or statement of this incongruity between perceptions, if one's perceiving on the physiological level versus on the soul level. So again, the eternality of the soul. Natva eham jata nasam natvam neme janadipi paha. Na sa chaiva na bhavishyana bhavishnai sarve vayam ataparam. Yet, because of our sensuous existence, as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur puts it, we basically are not on the same plane as the object of our thoughts. So instead, we're in a state, so this is referring to, you know, often one hears of the human condition, but the state we're actually in is a state of servitude to our thoughts. We're actually driven by our thoughts. And to use the words of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, it's in a most unnatural way. Bringing in that there's this state of servitude to one's thoughts, there's a feeling of impurity or repugnance that one experiences too when there's the connection with topics that are of a romantic or of a romantic nature. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's generalization is that there's a longing that generally accompanies thoughts related to sex, and this is but a part of our nature. And it's an acquired nature that we have. And this nature, it can't leave us until we can get rid of, or we can rid ourselves of the secondary nature itself. Continuing this aspect of longing is very interesting. According to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, there has to be a kind of reforming of our nature or reformation of our nature, which will then allow a complete transformation of our relation to this principle of sex. So it's almost an overhaul in terms of how we're going to be perceiving and considering the fact that we're armed with this difficulty of experiencing on a sensuous level, and also the fact that within us there's this longing aspect connected to attraction to the idea of romance or things of a romantic nature. So with this present understanding, when one hears a description of Krishna and the attractiveness of his form, or the form, how his form has attraction for the gopis, and I'm going to give a description of that form. And this is coming from Sri Krishna Lila Stava. "So beautiful with your bashful smiles and shy sidelong glances, your style of dress enticing the gopis, you granted them conjugal attraction. I offer my respects to you." So Srila Sanatana Goswami is indicating, obviously, a way of seeing that when this particular little scene is heard, it arouses incredible respect in him for Lord Krishna. So a very different kind of angle of view, I mean, on a transcendental plane. So a particular variety of reciprocal love has actually been shown here in this pastime. And it's clearly on the spiritual platform. And Srila Rupa Goswami, in Nectar of Devotion, he puts it this way. "Actually, the transactions of the spiritual world are inconceivable to us in our present state of life. Understanding the exchanges of transcendental loving service with Krishna is only possible when one is actually in touch with the pleasure potency of the Lord." So here's the missing ingredient. Now, how this takes place, that will allow us to actually be able to perceive in a different way. and again, Srila Rupa Goswami describes how this comes about. So it's through a very interesting, expansive kind of outlook. So I'm going to read. "The clouds in the sky arise from the ocean. And when the clouds become water again," here we have it taking place right behind us with all the necessary sound effects, "and fall to the ground, they glide back to the ocean." So in our case, we may see these clouds that have fallen to the ground, they're going to be gliding back to Lake Michigan. "Now, the pleasure potency of Krishna is compared to the ocean. The pure devotee is the pleasure-possessing cloud. And when he is filled with transcendental loving service, then he can bestow the mercy as a downpour of rain, and the pleasure potency returns to the ocean of Krishna." So there's the connection with the supremely merciful spiritual master who's actually through his transcendental loving service to Lord Krishna is then going to pour that mercy upon one so that one can then actually get in touch with the pleasure potency of Krishna. So that missing ingredient is highly dependent on the transcendentally endowed service that the spiritual master performs. And it's a service to oneself as a devotee serving the great personality. So it's not a small thing, this transition to going past that very physiological way of viewing things to actually viewing on with transcendental vision. So it's nice actually imagining having such a downpour and a deluge coming upon one's own head and heart from the spiritual master. Now, the particular type of loving sentiments that develop within the heart of a particular devotee, there's a term used. It's called vibhava. And there's a resulting manifestation or show which indicates that this loving sentiment's present in the heart. And it's visible in these kinds of external expressions. So this is on the transcendental plane. There's astonishment, there's fear, there's moving of the eyebrows, and there's smiling. And this is present here as Srila Sanatana Goswami's description of Krishna, because that's precisely what we hear he was doing. How is it again? With his bashful smiles and shy sidelong glances, and his style of dress, it's enticing the gopis. So this is actually a manifestation of deep devotion in the heart. So even Krishna, well not even, but he's carrying that kind of devotion towards his beloved devotees. Now, the different causes for developing this vibhava, it's actually coming from a place of steady ecstasy. So it's an ongoing state in the heart, this emotion. It's continuous. And that continuous ecstasy, these are the terms used in Nectar of Devotion, which I was interested one time, there was a big distribution of Nectar of Devotion in the temple to the public, and His Holiness Ramaphosa Swami was suggesting that everybody should read this particular text. So I can feel quite comfortable using the terminology from there, since it's something for general consumption. To get an understanding. So this steady ecstasy, this ongoing emotion within the heart is called Sanchari Bhava. And this continuous ecstatic love, it's only possible when one is situated fully in a transcendental position. And this ecstatic love, it sometimes has contradictory symptoms. This is how it's described in Nectar of Devotion. So sometimes there's a sense of abomination, like, oh, this is too much or terrible. And I'm just reading directly from the Nectar of this of diversion, as is put by Srila Rupa Goswami, the sense of abomination takes place when non-contradictory symptoms of ecstatic love are manifest distinctly. I'll read the next part. This is beyond my understanding, but it's necessary to read here. Contradictory ecstatic love is called selfish, while ecstatic love, which can adjust all contradictory or non-contradictory symptoms, is called direct selfless love. I'll carry on. Selfless symptoms are divided into five groups. So there's neutrality, servitude, fraternity, parenthood, and conjugal love. So we can take it that the love that we're hearing about here is selfless love. There's no difficulty for the parts of on the part of the gopis or Krishna to very freely exchange in terms of experiencing that continuous ecstatic love within the heart. Because there, that exchange is this conjugal love. So it's direct, selfless love. If there had been some difficulty on the part of the gopis, like say the contradictory element may have been, oh, our husbands are there, so we cannot actually freely express this love, this deep transcendental love for Krishna, then that would have fallen into the category of selfishness, because still there's awareness of needing to withhold in some sense. So the fact that we're hearing that there's a free flow indicates actually a selfless love. And such ecstatic love, in this particular case, it assumes a particular mode in contact with different aspects or different objects of love. So here, that mode or humor that's taking place is that relationship of conjugal love. So Lord Krishna and the young gopis, they're exhibiting this very clearly in different ways. So we hear there's glancing. And the quote is, the Lord glanced charmingly and smiled beautifully, playing upon his flute while his companions chanted his glories. That was from two verses back. So that's Krishna, how he's expressing that ecstatic, continuous, steady, ecstatic love in a particular mode of conjugal love. Or here, the young Vrindavan ladies, they're casting sidelong glances at the Lord, glances filled with bashfulness, laughter, and submission. And they're exchanging smiles. So Sri Krishna is completely accepting these glances as a proper offering of respect. And then we hear he enters the cowherd village, speaking very sweet words. So these expressions are considered a great reservoir of pleasure. So this is the pleasure that's actually there on the transcendental plane. It's an exchange of great love, and it takes a different mode or form according to the nature of the relationship. So it's externally visible, because here the mode of love is conjugal love, meaning that the gopis are seeing Krishna as their husband. So hence, there's these, the expression is through the facial expressions, the sidelong glances, there's shyness, there's a smiling, and even laughter. There's happiness from the exchange. And this same steadiness of ecstatic love on the conjugal plane, it expands. So it's not static, it expands. So the love expands internally and with the exchanges. And in the particular purport we heard on the mundane plane, how this sort of exchange happens. There's some happiness that the glances are received by one's object of love, and in a similar kind of way, but there's the exclusion of this deep ecstatic love that's steady, it's continuous, that's going on the transcendental plane, on the fully transcendental plane. Now, if one were to take this downpour of rain that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had described, Srila Rupa Goswami had described, then if we take this, that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is that downpour of rain in his great magnanimity in sharing his understandings, then one would hear, and he's very precise and exact. He says that when one hears, then one can't take it that the female form of the human soul and Lord Krishna is like the relation between the female form and its corresponding male form. So it's not like that at all. The amorous pastimes of Lord Krishna and the gopis of Raja are not the amorous pastimes between male and female of this world. So this is a very significant thing to comprehend. I recall many years ago, maybe it was the second time I visited India, and I was standing on a train platform in Mumbai, and anybody who's been to Mumbai knows that the trains are tremendously crowded, the platforms are tremendously crowded. When a train comes along, you know, people hurl themselves on the train and are hanging on, and even old ladies have no problem with using their elbows to shove one out of the way. So in that condition, waiting for a train, this man happened to be standing nearby, and I guess he saw I was a devotee. And so he said to me, I mean, these were the first words that came out of his mouth. He said, yes, he likes to read about the way Krishna is interacting with Srimati Radharani. I mean, I was so taken aback. I thought, on this busy platform, of all the things he needed to say to a person he's never met before, a devotee, this is what he's telling me. So I thought, you know, is it an attempt to, you know, somehow, you know, make a pass at me? I was completely confused. I was completely confused. So I looked at him and I said, oh, well, I think that's not the right way to go about reading the scriptures. So, anyway, yeah, so this Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's emphasis that these pastimes are not like the exchange between a human and a male form in this world needs this kind of emphasis, because clearly there is misunderstanding. I mean, if it happened on a busy platform in Mumbai, it must certainly not be uncommon. So he's continuing that it's because the principle that's actually at work here is that there's a substantiality to these pastimes, this exchange between Krishna and the gopis. And so even any kind of amour or love in this world, it wouldn't even be existing if there wasn't the substantiality that's there, that comes from Lord Krishna on the transcendental plane of these loving exchanges. So that's the actual reality, that it's possible to have this steady, continuous ecstasy, and depending on the nature of the relationship, although the nature of the relationship under discussion here is that of an amorous kind, a conjugal one, it wouldn't even be present in this world if that reality were not taking place, was not possible. So, and that reality, the spiritual transcendental reality, is actually this amour in a wholesome form. It's not, you know, that I'm suspicious of somebody, you know, perhaps making a pass. It's actually, in the spiritual world, it's wholesome, completely wholesome. There's a selflessness and a wholesomeness to that loving exchange, which isn't here. Clearly, there's selfish motive on the most part in loving dealings, certainly where that attraction is present between the male and the female form. Now, this process of reforming one's nature, which is what Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is emphasizing, is such that according to one's particular qualification as a conditioned human living entity, one first has to take shelter of regulative devotional service. So it's only later that some attachment to Lord Krishna can awaken. Then this mood of Raja can awaken in one. So there's a whole transcendental mood, and it has to be awakened, but it begins with taking shelter of regulative devotional service. So it's very ordered, the progression, very ordered, very controlled. So when one externally follows this regulative process of devotional service, meaning we're abiding by so many rules, so many regulations, on days when I'm doing devotional service, I have to keep my eye on the clock. You know, there's that amount of time for cooking, that amount of time for taking lunch, that amount of time for bathing again, that amount of time for traveling, arriving here at exactly the right time in order to make a plate. There's this amount of time to make a plate, this amount of time to spend on the altar. It's extremely regulated, extremely regulated. And actually, over time, it's just becomes a part of oneself. One's not even feeling that, this is sort of strict or ordered. It's just very natural. So, and one just, but one understands it's a very ordered progression. This coming to awakening, this mood of Raja that is essential for being able to understand these pastimes in the proper way. So one's externally following the regulative process of devotional service, and internally, at the same time while this is going on, one's taking shelter of one's attachment to Krishna. So I can share this because I just think it's such an integral component in my personal devotional life. This internal cultivation of attachment to Krishna, I personally feel that whatever service has to be performed, whether it's deity service or preparing classes, always I actually have to say deep prayers before I begin any of these services. And that's part of this respectful acknowledgement of to who that worshipable object is and for whom I'm performing the service. And this is a means for cultivating this attachment for Krishna. So this kind of cultivation or internally taking shelter of attachment to Krishna, and then over time, this relationship between Krishna and oneself as the devotee, then one can actually come to appreciate this love of the paramour as the gopis are doing. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he explains this, that the lovers of Krishna take shelter of this paramour love by internally cultivating attachment while externally following the regulative principles and respecting the Lord and protector of these principles. So they're understanding Krishna's position, and that's indicated here because in this verse, we're hearing that Krishna takes their loving expression as the proper respect offered to him. Interesting. It means that this internal cultivation of attachment to Krishna, and Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur actually says it's taking place. He says that they're respecting the Lord and protector of these principles, these religious principles. So everything is accompanied by deep respect. So you can see this discrepancy with regular male-female interactions. It's so easy to cross the line of respect. So easy. Be it, not observing a boundary properly or just allowing one's own selfish needs to override a relationship, and it becomes disrespectful. But notice that the wholesomeness of the steady, ecstatic love, there's profound respect between Lord Krishna and the devotees. So you can understand why this is the most pure and extraordinary expression of love that's there. And Krishna gives this direction too for how this internal attachment can develop and how one can actually, be cultivating the attachment and the respect. So he puts it this way. In all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. That's Bhagavad Gita 18:58. So one has no goal in life except to work in Krishna consciousness. That's actually the goal of one's life. So whatever one does externally, whatever duties one has to fulfill, the actual goal is one's Krishna consciousness, this internal cultivation of attachment to Lord Krishna. So our whole aim is just to satisfy Krishna. And while working in this way, one thinks of Krishna only. So one acts under the order of Krishna, meaning, all these things we're reading and understanding of how he's indicating one needs to shape one's life, or under the orders of the spiritual master, he's also indicating how one should shape one's life. He's going to bestow his mercy on us, the living entities, by establishing those activities as a form of spiritual practice. So those activities that we're performing become established. Like, when you're planting a plant, at some point you see the creature first struggles, is a little distressed. One has to learn, what amount of water one needs to give that creature. Then after some time, the creature becomes established in that place where it's got planted. It starts to thrive. So these regulative activities we're performing in devotional service, they start to become established. One actually starts to become comfortable with those activities and embraces them. It's not like something external to oneself or a little difficult or, oh no, here we go again. Not like that. It actually becomes established. One is very comfortable and happy with those activities. So they become part of one's regular spiritual practices. And these regulative principles that we're following, They come to awaken that attachment as we're cultivating our Krishna consciousness. So actually, as we're following these regulative principles, we can actually feel great gratitude, because we can know that after this attachment is awakened, then there'll actually be the proper appreciation and understanding of this kind of, or the steady stream of ecstatic love that's manifesting in these beautiful descriptions and exchanges that are taking place between Krishna and the gopis. And also that mood will awaken in one. So thank you. If there's any thoughts on this rather deep subject matter,
this is more of a appreciation than a question, that I was appreciating your emphasis on respect, how in material relationships, material romantic relationships can imitate such activities as smiling and laughing and interacting, but a little bit of a rupture will create a lot of disrespect, whereas Krishna and his devotees always have very, very deep respect for one another. And I was hearing this morning, Radha Govinda Maharaj was explaining the nature of the love of the residents of Vrindavan. He was saying that when they churned the ocean of milk, you remember that pastime, nectar came out and so many things came out? And they used the Mandara mountain to churn the ocean. In the same way, Lord Krishna used the mountain of separation to churn the hearts of the residents of Vrindavan, and what came out, but like the most ecstatic feelings of love, you know, and feelings of longing for Krishna. You were mentioning this point of longing also. So I was just appreciating how, yes, externally, the romantic behavior of this world may look like what's happening in the spiritual world, but at a deeper level, there is tremendous respect and love that we don't have in the relationships in this world, you know. We have something small, but not much.
Thank you very much for making the comparison of the churning of the heart, the churning of the Mandara mountain. Thank you. And actually, on a mundane plane, it actually is very difficult to sustain that loving mood because of not having approached it in the first place with deep respect, and actually even to function as a devotee, if there is that kind of relationship that's described, that's of a loving nature, there has to be such being on guard to actually treat the other person constantly with great respect. One has to be on guard, because that's in that more comfortable, intimate space, that's where one's own mind can actually sometimes get free play. So one has to be extremely cautious, because the worst aspect of oneself can emerge in that intimate space. So there has to be great thought given to the other entity, hopefully also being a devotee of Lord Krishna, and their particular process also of cultivating attachment to Lord Krishna, and knowing that one can then treat the person extremely respectfully. Otherwise, you know, that disrespect comes in too easily, too easily. One sees it. I mean, the general picture, when you view old people interacting, one feels this kind of sense of pain, because one sees that it's like conditioned natures just actually having fallen into a pattern. I mean, many old people, and you think, 20, 30 years, these persons have been together, and this is the result. It's just conditioned minds interacting in a kind of barely tolerating each other way. And this is the general picture. And one thinks, what a sorry state. You know, may one never get to experience, 20 years of interaction with another human being that's on a more intimate way with it resulting in this kind of picture. So, yeah. So thank you very much. I kept everybody a little bit longer through my lateness and my deep apologies. I hope it hasn't thrown your day off in any way. Thank you very, very much for kindly sitting and waiting and being present in the class. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.